Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
We saw last week the signing into new law requiring alcohol products to have their calorie content as well as the health risks on the labels. And as we know, there have long been proposals for mandatory calorie counts on food menus, which are currently shelved or voluntary, in other words. So the question is, how much would knowing the calorie information influence your behaviour if it's on the wine label or even on the beer tap at the bar or on the drinks menu or indeed the food menu in a bar or a restaurant? 51551 is the number you can text with your views. And to discuss this, I'm joined by Dr. Donal O'Shea, who's the HSE's National Clinical Lead for Obesity. Anthony Morrison is owner of Christie's Bar in Kilkenny, and Gina Murphy owns Hugo's Restaurant in Dublin. Now, Donal, we'll start with the drinks. It's been signed into law for there to be calories on the labels. Do you think that that information should be on menus as well? And it's been suggested in the UK that it would even be on the beer taps in a pub.
Yeah, I mean, I think information and knowledge allows you to make informed decisions. And there's very good research done that about 30% of people are influenced by the displaying of calories and on average choose in the food setting. We don't have this for beer and wine. In the food setting, choose about 90 kilocalories less per transaction. Mm-hmm. And at a population level, to have an initiative that influences 30% of people is massive.
And do you think it would happen here? Because the British government did try to do it and then it was rejected because of the cost implications.
Yeah, I think we should do it here. I think it's easier to do it here if the British are doing it. Historically, that's how we timed the sugar tax to coincide with the UK's introduction. And the reformulation that followed that legislation was like nothing we've seen before. So legislation influences the behaviour of the food and drinks industry. Mm-hmm. And can inform consumers in their choices.
What about the unintended consequence, though? You go into a bar and you see the wine and the beer has, you know, close to 300 calories, let's say, for argument's sake. Ah, I'm going to choose a vodka and soda instead, and I'll have three or four of those. I might have had one pint, so I'm drinking more alcohol than I otherwise would.
You have to look at, switching behaviour, as it's called. I think it's used more as a threat by the industry. Most people will have decided when they go into a pub, they know their favourite drink. It's just whether they have it with a slimline tonic, in which case your gin and tonic is 60 kilocalories if it's a single measure. Pint of Guinness, 125, 130 kilocalories. A pint of lager, 160 kilocalories. And it might just mean people will have one or two pints, not a third, when they see it.
Mm. Do you really think, though, that most people will change their minds? If you're going in to have a pint, you're going to have a pint.
That's correct, yeah. And you don't want to be a killjoy about things, but information is key. And we have to acknowledge the fact that we're living in a society that has more chronic disease now than ever. Mm-hmm. And obesity is a primary driver of that. And we have to do our very best, not just to treat the disease of obesity, but also have preventive measures. And this is a preventive measure that influences about 30% of the population. That's huge.
You ran through some of the calorie counts there. I think there's a belief that stout, let's call it Guinness or Murphy's or whatever you're having, that it might have fewer calories than lager. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's a modest difference, about 40 kilocalories less in a pint of Guinness than in a pint of lager.
Mm-hmm. It's not going to make a huge difference, though, is it?
Yeah, but again, at a population level, small changes over time make a big difference. At an individual level, there are small changes. Mm-hmm. But at a population level, it's like vaccination. One person getting vaccinated is no good. You need population change. And our nutrition and physical activity profile, we have to think of it in that same public health sense.
Okay, before we talk about wine and the amount of wine that we're putting in the glass, let's have a quick word with our publican and our restaurant owner. So, Anthony, do people often ask you about the calorie counts and drinks? Does it come up?
No, I think the doctor's right. I think the decision is made ever before you enter the pub and on what drink you're going to purchase. You know, you're going to purchase your favourite drink. Are people aware of the calorie counts? We live in a world with information at our fingertips, so I think people are educated enough to make a decision on what they want to consume when they're entering a licensed premises. But with regards to calories, Yeah, I'm sure some of my customers are aware of it. I personally, it's not my space. It doesn't bother me as much as it probably should. But yeah, they make their own decisions coming in. I'm sure if they do want the information, they can get it readily themselves at a fingertip of the
mm-hmm.
phone.
Mm-hmm. And do you think, though, if you had somebody walking in and you had, say, all of the calorie counts on the taps across, that they might say, well, I'm going to have a pint, so I'm going to have the one with fewer calories in it?
Yeah, look, don't get me wrong. There's all walks of life out there. We open our door every morning. We don't know what's coming in. But I suppose if people do want the information and society deems it relevant, I mean, the burden will fall on suppliers to give it to me, to give it to you. So I don't think it on the taps is going to make a major impact on the decision-making process and the consumer. But I suppose if they do want it, it might be handy for us to have some parchment to paper or something that we can obviously give them the information they need if they don't already have it. But putting it on the taps, most people will tell you the bar taps are quite difficult to read. The best things people choose, you know, by branding or by, you know, the colours that they're used to seeing, they don't really get right up close to the tap. The tap is only maybe 70 mil wide, you know. It's not a huge space to be putting information on that people will readily read.
Donal wants to come in there. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, there's very good evidence that you need the calorie count to be displayed as close to the point of purchase as possible for it to have its maximum impact. So scan the QR code is no good. It needs to be there in the eye line of the consumer mm-hmm. if it's to have its optimum effect.
Yeah, I know there's one coffee chain certainly that does it, and the occasional time where I say to myself, well, I might have a cappuccino today, when I see the calorie count, I go, no, actually, it's not worth it. I'll stick with the old boring Americano.
I think the calories on menu boards there made a huge difference to people's choices when they went into coffee shops. And you could see the size of the muffins and the size of the kind of caramel squares reduce. So they came below 298 calories instead of 360.
Mm-hmm.
So that it just was a more... And they're the changes that are even better.
So it's changing more than consumer behaviour then in that case.
Absolutely. It's changing portion size.
Yeah. Gina, what would you make of the idea of calorie counts on drinks menus? So the list of beers that you have, the wine list, the spirit list. Do you think it would affect behaviour?
No, I don't. Listen, I'm all for public health and the promotion of healthy eating and healthy dining and drinking. But things like this, we wouldn't see as being an influence on consumer behaviour at all. When people come to a restaurant, it's not something they do every day. You know, it's an occasion or there's a reason for doing it. It doesn't tend to influence. I wouldn't see it as an influencer on what their choices would be because it's a special occasion. So they're going to have something that they wouldn't normally have. Now, we're very different. We're only a tiny portion of, you know, the whole retail sector that caters to consumers. So, you know, we're just a small slice of it. I don't think it would really have a bearing on us. But the other side of it is if we are to do calories on menus, it's a very difficult and onerous task to do. And especially with small businesses, you know, we're not nutritionists. We're chefs and we're restaurateurs, but it's a very specific task and it's a very specific skill to analyze a dish for its calorie content. So when you're dealing with items that change daily, it really would be very, I don't know how to say this, but
it would be very onerous for you to do that,
well,
I think is what you're saying.
Very impractical. I mean, okay. It would wipe out your ability to do specials or daily dishes because you just wouldn't have the tools to be able to work out exactly to the calorie count and where stop, how accurate does it have to be.
Donal O'Shea might have something to say about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think 80% of what most restaurants sell is the same. They know what moves every day and they know the amount of it that moves. Calorie counting was never really meant to apply to specials. When it was launched in the States, it was for the larger restaurant chains. It was not even targeting the individual restaurants. It's about a population reach. Safe Foods developed a very good tool for working out the calorie content. And you don't have to be within 10 kilocalories of the amount. You need people to know that if they have their lasagna with the chips, it's 1,100 calories. If they have a lasagna with salad, it's back down to 650 calories. And they can make that decision.
Mm-hmm. So it just needs to be a rough estimate.
It needs to be reasonably accurate. Yeah. But I mean, there's a difference between, you know, a chicken that's cooked in a cream sauce versus a tomato sauce. There's going to be quite a big calorie difference, and it'll be there for the individual to see and make a decision.
So he's saying it's doable, Gina.
Well, everything is doable, but where we would be coming from, and as you know, an individual who's responsible for this, there's a bigger picture here, and the picture is educating the population. I mean, coming into my place and ordering off my menu isn't going to change the world, but where we need to start really is education, and it has to come back to being taught in the schools. In my opinion, home economics, as it was called in my day, I don't know what it's called now, but it should be a compulsory subject. Children and teenagers should be educated into what mm-hmm. is, what's within each food item, how to grow food, how to cook their own food. And if they're taught this, then they have a reasonable knowledge by the time they get to an age like where they're going into the bar.
So people don't need to be able to make an educated choice, is what Gina's saying.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And home economics is still a subject and it's not compulsory, but the SPHE curriculum, which runs through junior and senior cycle, incorporates physical and health education. And I think schools are in the process of doing a really good job. There needs to be, you can always do more, but the SPHE curriculum, which will incorporate cooking knowledge and skills, will be something that every student does.
Mm-hmm. Now, lots of messages on this. I would not read calorie details on food or drink in a restaurant. A restaurant meal is a treat, and I do not want to know the amount of calories I'm consuming on a treat night out, says one listener. Another, it would definitely make a difference when ordering cocktails because you have to pick them off the menu. Eugene wants to know why calorie counts can't they also appear on your receipt? Well, I suppose at that stage you've probably bought it, consumed it, and the damage is done, so the choice is gone. Another one, I would prefer if the price was displayed on the tap instead of being hidden in tiny writing on the far side of the bar on the label of the bottle. Somebody else talking about the nanny state and asking us to cop on. Now, I said I wanted to talk about wine and wine yep. glasses and what's being served. What's that tiny little thimble size thing you've brought in, Donal?
This is all the way up from the O'Donnell Farm in Kerr, and it's my sister-in-law's 1970s her parents' wine glass.
Mm-hmm. And it's tiny.
If you got that at a dinner table, you'd take a look and say, is that really for wine or is it for sherry or something else?
Do you know how much in terms of millilitres you could get into that glass?
Well, I can tell you, I think if we poured any of what you have in front of you there into this, we would be making a mess on your desk.
So
I don't know the exact mills.
I have a number of glasses here which are filled with a non-alcoholic substance. And if you're watching us this morning, you might be able to see this. We'll put them up on Instagram later on as well. What I have here is a standard glass, which is 107 mils. That is 1/7 of a bottle. Now, that represents a standard unit. It looks, I mean, if you got that in a restaurant or in a bar, you might complain.
Yeah, you'd be unhappy with it, correct. And yet it's the standard measure and it's about 85 kilocalories.
Okay, so that is, when we're talking about standard units that yeah. you should have, that represents one of them. Anthony, do you know off the top of your head how many millilitres are in a standard glass of wine that you would serve?
So we've large bottles, 750 ml, and we have the quarter bottles. So the quarter bottles would probably be our predominant seller. They're 187 ml.
Mm-hmm. I have this here. That looks like a substantial glass of wine. So that's a quarter bottle.
Yeah.
And that would represent then close to 2 units, wouldn't it? This one here.
Yes.
Correct. 2 units in that. The next one I have here is a large glass of wine. Now, do you serve a large glass, Anthony?
No. So, like, again, we don't predominantly, we don't pour glasses of wine. We would sell a large bottle, all right, a 750ml bottle, and
okay.
the consumer would decide then how much liquid they consume in each serving of it. But no, we don't serve a large glass of wine as such.
So what I have here is a large glass, which is 250ml. That would constitute a quarter of a bottle. Now, that's a very large glass of wine, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that is a third of a...
That's a third of a bottle, yeah. yeah. It's a little more than the quarter bottle. I'll hand that over to you there as well, Donal. And then I have this old-fashioned champagne glass, which is 85 millilitres. Is that around about where we should be?
Yeah, that would be it.
For a unit?
But when I poured that, how many mils were in the first?
The first one was, remind me, how many were in the first one? 107, that represents one standard unit. That goes into your old-fashioned
wine glass. It fits, but I mean, it's right up at the top of it and you would consider it overfilled.
Okay. And Gina, for you, how much do you pour if someone asks you for a glass of wine?
We're the same as the bar, so we pour 187, so we pour an exact quarter bottle. But I think the key to wine in restaurants is to remember it's not the main ticket item. It's an accompaniment to a meal. So it's not drank at speed. It's leisurely sipped as an accompaniment. So, we serve a quarter of a bottle.
Mm-hmm. But this is symptomatic, Donal, of the problems that we find ourselves in when we all expect to get a great big glass of wine or a great big glass that is half filled with two units of alcohol as opposed to one.
And it's beside a dinner plate that is 2 inches in diameter bigger than the dinner plates back in the 70s. Mm-hmm. So everything has got bigger. And there's this concept of portion disproportion, where we've completely lost sight of what was a serving. Sizes have got bigger. Go large. All the offers that are, you know, the fast food companies are go large for an extra euro.
But our perception of a measure or a serving has changed, because we look at your small glass from the 70s, which is what we're told a standard drink is now, today.
Correct.
We're looking at that and we're saying, that's not enough.
Yeah.
You send that back.
Yeah, you would.
I mean, Anthony, you know, given what you serve in a standard glass, that if you were to serve someone 107 millilitres in a glass, one of today's glasses, they'd probably complain, wouldn't they?
Yeah, well, look, I suppose just going back to Gina's statement, it all goes back to education. I mean, expectation and reality. The expectation is they want value for money. The reality is the more you consume, it's probably worse for you in every walk of life, whether that be sweets or anything. But if you bring it right back to what Gina said, if you bring it back to grassroots, where you educate the population on what the consumable rate should be. I mean, I can't see the glass now, unfortunately, I'm in another room, but... Mm-hmm.
It's
sure
tiny. You can imagine. Do you know what it looks like, Anthony? It looks like a sherry glass.
Right. But look, I'm sure those glasses were all the rage back in the day. And the doctor said it himself. We live in a mass consumer society now, where you spend 1 euro more and you get more, you know, maybe 50% more. But we're in the licensed trade, like I said earlier on. We're heavily regulated. We don't have that option. We can only pour what's legally permitted. If someone wishes to consume more at their own rate, I mean, at the end of the day, we're all adults. We have to make informed decisions. And while most of society does that, there's always a few that lets us down. And unfortunately, they, by course, make the direction of where we go when we're... So, I mean, I suppose what I'm trying to say is pouring a glass of wine to whatever size you pour it is, at the end of the day, your own decision based on what you buy.
You see, we don't know how many times they refilled that glass in the 70s either, Donal, do we?
We don't. And wine was not consumed very much in Ireland in the 70s. So, I mean, that's... and the primary driver of our consumptive behaviour at the moment is the food and drinks industry and their advertising approach. And, I mean, the cynical use of Guinness 0.0 and Heineken 0.0 around sporting events to get their brand in your face, ignoring all watersheds and commitments to no longer advertising or promoting in any way, shape or form to under 12s. And they're sitting there front and centre at major sporting events.
We had a conversation about that recently, and there's currently nothing in place stopping them from doing that, because it is a non-alcoholic brand. It doesn't contain any alcohol. But I see what your argument is, that it is the brand that's getting out there.
If they were committed to responsible marketing and they're obeying the alcohol content, they would not be doing this. It's very cynical.
We will leave that one there. Thank you very much for coming in, Dr. Donal O'Shea and Gina Murphy from Hugo's Restaurant in Dublin, along with Anthony Morrison, owner of Christie's Bar in Kilkenny. Thank you both for joining us too. Back after this.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.